Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them, and designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
He comes in. And Bob is here. He is in and ready to go.
You know, first of all, let's put it this way.
Yeah.
Effective Wednesday of this week, that radio.com app becomes even more important.
Absolutely.
I'd get that downloaded today if I were you, if you haven't done so. Mr. Minko is
I have it downloaded.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure
you good things on there.
Yes, there are, as a matter of fact.
Including this program.
Well, all right. And, you know, we're just setting the table, as I like to say, on Sunday mornings now. Ann Liguria's Long Talking Golf after our 7 o'clock update this Sunday morning. We always look forward to that program. There's lots of good information there. Mink is going to keep us up to date on happenings in the sporting world. We have a busy show today. I'm Bob Salter, and I'm very pleased to say that we have two guests who are joining us on our program today to take us into a discussion about a topic that in all the years of doing this show, we have actually never explored. We're going to be talking about the topic known as Usher Syndrome. You're going to find out what that's all about. Joining us on our program are two guests, as I mentioned. Rebecca Alexander is joining us on our program. Rebecca, and her background is an author, a psychotherapist, a group fitness instructor. She's been an advocate and an extreme athlete, and she has quite a story to share with us. Also joining us on our program is a gentleman that she has been working with in an effort to try to spread awareness about Usher syndrome. Dr. Daniel Labbe is joining us on our program. By his profession, he's an ophthalmologist, and he's got a lot to share with us as well, talking about this topic. First of all, good morning to both of you. Welcome to our program on The Fan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Bob.
And good morning. I guess in beginning this discussion, we need to perhaps set the stage as to what we mean when we use this term Usher syndrome. Who wants to tackle that?
Okay, so I'll just give you a very brief overview. Usher syndrome is the leading cause, genetic cause of deafblindness in the U.S. and it's around the world as well. And it basically causes exactly what it suggests, both progressive blindness and deafness. And there are three types. The first type of Usher syndrome, you're born completely deaf and you're gradually losing your vision, and your vision loss tends to happen more rapidly. Type 2, you're born with a set amount of hearing loss and you're progressively losing your vision, and your hearing loss tends to decline later in your life. And type 3, which is the most recently identified, which is the form that I have, causes both progressive vision and hearing loss, but has a milder onset. So I was born with relatively normal hearing loss, relatively normal hearing with just a cookie bite of hearing loss. I'm now 39 years old, and I'm cochlear implanted on both ears. So without my cochlear implants, I'm completely deaf. But with them, I hear very, very well. And my vision now is, a normally sighted person has about 180 degrees of vision when looking straight ahead. Mm-hmm. And I have about 10 degrees of my central most vision.
So to try to explain that for those of us who, that may be a difficult thing for us to imagine. If you're looking at something that is directly in front of you, do you see that directly, or do you see things that are more in the peripheral?
No. So central most vision is what's directly in front of me. And so generally the vision part of Usher syndrome is caused by what's called retinitis pigmentosa, or RP. And that generally causes tunnel vision and affects your peripheral vision first. So I happen to have a very small sliver of peripheral vision, but so as not to confuse any of your listeners. In general, it means that I see basically like looking through two straws.
Wow.
So, Bob, if you think about a batter at the plate and he's looking towards the pitcher, he'll only see the pitcher's head and the area around the arms. He won't see anything on third base, on first base. He won't see anything around second base. Just sees that very central part of the baseball diamond, if you think about it. That's central vision loss, or central vision.
How do you get used to that?
Well, it's definitely not easy. I mean, it takes, you know, which you probably don't talk a lot about this in sports, but it is it's a very physical experience, obviously, because, you know, it causes you to have to constantly be adapting to your environment. I've now been trained in a cane, and I use it, and it really helps me navigate. Oftentimes it's helpful to use my cane mostly to get people out of my way, even if I see well in a particular environment. But I think that for most people, you know, experiencing vision loss, whether it's from Usher syndrome or any retinal degenerative condition, it's a very emotional experience. And if you don't really allow yourself to sort of feel the emotions that come with it, that are very similar to sort of death and dying, the grief and the loss that comes with it, then I think sometimes you don't adapt as well, and people become very angry, or they become very isolated or depressed. So it is something that people really need to make connections with others about, whether with other people who have retinal degenerative conditions like Usher syndrome, or even just being involved in your community in some form with others who can support you.
Mm. You were told early on that by age 30, you would be completely blind, as I understand that's what you were told.
Yes.
Obviously, at this point, that has not occurred. Is there any indication exactly why that's the case?
Well, there isn't, except that, you know, there's only so much that doctors can really tell you. I mean, they can give you sort of a trajectory based on what they've seen in the past, or, you know, depending on how common a particular condition is. Now, Usher syndrome is an orphan disease, which means that there are not as many people affected with it, or at least there may be more people affected with it than we actually know. We just have to spread awareness and get people diagnosed so that we can help, you know, find treatment. So we don't know why it is, but I can tell you that it's, as a psychotherapist, it's so interesting to have people who have a full 180 degrees of vision, and who are far more sort of, I think, unhappy, and unfulfilled in their lives, And with just 10 degrees of vision, I'm constantly reminded of what I can see still. That 10 degrees of vision for most people would seem absolutely terrifying. And for me, it feels like so much hope. And I feel so fortunate even to have the vision that I still have.
Mm. How did you get started as an athlete? Because you've accomplished quite an awful lot in an athletic background.
Well, you know, what's interesting about doing like extreme athlete sports and teaching fitness classes is that, you know, I can't control what's happening to my vision, my hearing. I can't control that I'm going deaf and blind. But for all intents and purposes, the rest of my body is just as physically capable as anybody else's. And I actually, when I was 18, was in a big accident, and that's a whole other show for you. But I broke just about most of the bones in my body, and so I had to be rehabilitated. And so, as many athletes are, we get injured, whether it's, you know, not usually through an accident, but through overuse and you know, constant use of our muscles and our bodies. And for me, it's a way to not only, you know, avoid injury and keep myself healthy and active, but my body can do just as much as anybody else's. I just have to adapt to whatever, you know, my circumstances are. So I do like CrossFit, the high intensity interval training, and I do these extreme athlete races. I just have someone who runs with me as my, you know, as like my race mate.
Mm. And how did you and Dr. Lobby start working together?
I'll let him tell you that story.
Well, it's a good story. I think through family, we family met each other, and Rebecca's dad talked to my wife, and we had a lot in common in terms of what she likes to do and what I like to do. And you heard what Rebecca does, and she does it very, very well. What I do is eye care, and specifically eye care for athletes. Normally, what we try to do is to enhance people's vision for their athletic sport to perform better at the sport that they want to, kind of enhancing the vision they have. And we had the idea, Rebecca and I together, that maybe we can do the same thing to enhance the vision that remains for her to make it even more useful as we do for the athletes. And Rebecca came to the office. We were able to do a couple different things with her, do some testing. And as I mentioned earlier, hitting a baseball really only requires a central vision. So this is an area that in baseball I've been working for about 25 years to try to enhance the vision of batters. And what we found is a lot of similarity. And by doing those same techniques with Rebecca, not only were we able to show subjectively, but also objectively on testing and through Rebecca's experience that training was able to make her vision more useful, more immediate. And we published a paper actually about that this past summer, this summer a few weeks ago, describing the techniques we used and how the effect helped her.
Mm. And is it your hope that that paper will perhaps spur more research discussion in this area?
Exactly. It's really the question, as Rebecca mentioned, most people have vision that they don't really use, and most people have muscle and athletic ability they don't really use. And mm-hmm. by combining the two, whether you're fully sighted or you're partially sighted, that we can make vision more useful and therefore make yourself more productive and more efficient and better at what you want to do. So hopefully we can spread that word around and people can take up the cause and maximize the vision that remains, or maximize the vision that you have for the best of your ability.
Okay. One of the reasons for our discussion today, and we're going to talk more in depth about this as we move into the second segment of our discussion, is to talk about, first of all, Rebecca is actually going to be throwing out first pitch on Tuesday night in baseball game. We'll talk about what that experience is like and exactly what your hope is in terms of trying to raise awareness. I know you're working with Major League Baseball as well, and try to share some of that information. We're talking with two guests on our program, talking about this topic of Usher syndrome. Rebecca Alexander is talking with us, as well as Dr. Daniel Lobby. And they are with us for our entire show this morning. I'm Bob Salter. We are along until 7 after our 7 o'clock update, which Mr. Minko will bring us. Ann LaGoria is along, and she'll be talking golf here on The Fan.
Radio.com. Radio. Bob'sTheFan.com.
It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. It's Ann Liguori's Talking Golf along after our 7 o'clock update on The Fan this and every Sunday morning during the summer. We are in a discussion about the topic of Usher syndrome with two guests who have joined us, Rebecca Alexander and Dr. Daniel Lobby, of talking with us on our program. Rebecca is actually on Tuesday going to be throwing out the first pitch, and that's part of a campaign to raise awareness about Usher syndrome that you've been involved in, both of you, along with Major League Baseball. How did this campaign come about, and what exactly are you hoping to do with this?
Well, so how did this campaign come about? Well, what Dr. Lobby, I'm not sure, has told you or whether your viewers know, is that he's actually a very big deal in the Major League Baseball world. And he probably won't toot his own horn because he's incredibly humble and one of the most generous people you'll ever meet, and also very, very dedicated to his work. But he's really helped, you know, the Astros and the Cubs get to the World Series by, you know, training their athletes in sports vision, really being able to fine tune their visions for, you know, to play the game. And so with that in mind, in training me with my still remaining usable vision, we realized, well, there's got to be some way to, you know, marry the two of these or get them, you know, put this together and really help us spread the word about Usher syndrome. You know, as I mentioned earlier in the segment, it is an orphan disease, which means that there are many people who are actually living out there in the world with it who have not yet been diagnosed. So the more people we get diagnosed, the more awareness there is, the more people we have to really present even to the research and scientific communities for the need for treatment. So we have a lot of really promising research happening around the country and the world, for that matter. But it certainly, we would do a lot more and go a lot further with having people with the right and proper diagnoses, that is not only just their diagnoses with Usher syndrome, but also the subtype that they have, Usher 1, 2, or 3, again, as I mentioned earlier. And also to really help people know that they're not alone. If you can imagine for even a blink of an eye what it might be like to be losing not just your vision, but your hearing as well. It's an incredibly daunting and overwhelming process, but there are a lot of people out there who are living with this condition. And I think when you hear people describe Usher syndrome or any type of debilitating condition, you hear people use words like suffer or being robbed of. And I think that sort of engenders this feeling or idea that without vision and hearing, or while losing it, that your life does not have quality, or that you don't have the ability to challenge yourself and live with meaning. And so that's part of the awareness as well, is being able to show people that you can live with Usher syndrome and have a very fulfilling, meaningful life. And part of the way you do that, as your Yankees fans, or baseball fans, I'm sorry, do, is with community.
When you're talking about an event like Tuesday night, what's that going to mean for you to throw out that first pitch?
Well, I really have to thank Dr. Lobby for connecting us and really getting the MLB on board to help us spread awareness, because this is way above his, you know, sort of call of duty. So I'm eternally grateful to him for that, for this opportunity. But more than that, to be able to really put a face to Usher syndrome. There are so many people who live with shame and who live with fear. And to sort of represent the community and show people and that they, you know, that we are out there and that we are here as a community to really help each other get through a very different experience of living life with vision and hearing loss, but also to provide a sense of community. for everyone. It's just, I'm so excited. And because when I get excited, sometimes I cry. I may be so happy and so excited that I have tears in my eyes when I do it too, just because I'm so proud of what we're doing and to be a part of this community.
I think, Bob, one of the things to keep in mind is that everybody has a unique set of abilities. And whether it's the baseball athletes that we see, or football players, or basketball players, everyone has a unique set of abilities. Some of those are visual abilities. Some of the people have sharper vision. Some people need glasses. Some people have wider fields of vision. Some people only have central fields of vision. Some people, frankly, have talent to hit a baseball. And other people have talent to throw football. You think of Michael Jordan and a couple other Tim Tebow players who you think may be athletes that have abilities everywhere, and no one has an ability everywhere. And everyone's unique combination of abilities should lead them to do what they can perform the best at. And I think one of the things we hope to achieve on Tuesday is making the fans in the stadium and hopefully those watching from outside aware that whether you have a vision disability or you have a vision ability or you have a sport ability, everyone is unique and has a package they put together. And some people have a package that works good on the baseball diamond. Other people have a package that works good in business or in other fields. And that to motivate yourself to use whatever package you have to the best of your ability is probably what's going to make you happiest and most successful. And I think that's kind of a sub-message that we hope to get out in addition to the awareness of this syndrome, which frankly is not that rare. About 1 in 20,000 roughly people suffer from it. And I'm not going to use the word suffer, but we'll say have that spectrum of abilities. 1 in 20,000 is a fairly common problem. It's not extremely, extremely rare, but it's not something you see every day.
And when we talk about this idea of diagnosis, because this is something that Rebecca mentioned a few moments ago, and saying, and this struck me, that there are people who are living with this who it's never been diagnosed. And at the time I thought, well, how could you be living with it and it never have been diagnosed? Can you explain that?
Yeah, remember, Usher syndrome is a combination of hearing loss with the vision loss. And so there are actually a fair number of people that have the vision loss component without the hearing component. And it affects, as Rebecca mentioned, the peripheral vision initially. And similar to other eye diseases, besides retinitis pigmentosa, part of Usher syndrome, things like glaucoma affect your peripheral vision before it affects your central vision. So many people actually don't realize they lose their periphery until they start bumping into things on the side or have severe difficulty having lost their middle vision even, not just the periphery. So I think there's a lot of people that don't go to eye exams, don't get their eyes checked regularly. No one is able to diagnose the pigment changes in the back of the eye because they never see it. People don't realize that they're losing that vision and don't know that they have this condition.
Mm. And, you know, another part of that is that oftentimes people with Usher syndrome are diagnosed with the hearing loss first. And just as Dr. Labby just mentioned, you know, peripheral vision for some people, you know, it obviously, at least initially, is harder to detect sometimes than the loss of central vision. But it also affects, first and foremost, your night vision before your daytime vision. So a lot of people may have difficulty seeing at night, but again, because it's dark, you know, who can say, you know, what they see, you know, at night clearly, because in the dark, it's difficult for a lot of people to see. But so for many people, they get the hearing loss first, and then they start to notice some changes in their vision. Again, there are any number of combinations. I happen to be, you know about my vision, before my hearing loss. As I said, I was born with about a cookie bite of hearing loss, but we didn't know that it was progressive. And we thought, that, you know, maybe that the hearing loss actually came from, you know, having ear infections or something like that. So, yeah, it's a good question.
And I think the answer really is the need for routine, you know, medical care and specifically routine eye care to pick up whether you have a slight peripheral vision loss, whether it's due to retinitis pigmentosa, potentially Usher syndrome, due to glaucoma, due to a varied number of diseases that can affect visual function, which most of them can be intervened on. Unfortunately, we don't have any great treatment to reverse the retinal loss in these cases, But there are plenty of eye diseases that are fairly common that if we can diagnose them early, we can intervene and really limit people's loss.
And with Usher syndrome, how is it a challenge to diagnose that in an infant?
It is actually, in the early cases, it's very hard to diagnose because you don't see the typical pigment changes or coloration changes that occur in the retina that make it very easy to diagnose.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do have to rely on other testing, other electrical testing, other imaging testing to try to diagnose it, along, very importantly, with the history, with a family history, potentially some genetic evaluation. And I think Rebecca can tell you about the genetics involved in Usher syndrome. You really need to bring multi-factors to bear on trying to make the diagnosis based on what the patient is experiencing or what the testing shows.
Well, and so it depends on what type of Usher syndrome a child is born with. You know, these days, there's so much genetic testing able to be done. And part of what genetic testing can help with is determining or being able to diagnose a condition that may not have manifested itself yet, in an infant. But if an infant is diagnosed with hearing loss early on, it certainly can be, screened for through genetic testing, through blood work. But that is a good question, because many people, and I think that there are people who are becoming, who are getting diagnosed earlier and earlier now as science has continued and technology has continued to improve over time, that they're able to get earlier diagnoses and therefore, the appropriate interventions and also the type of support that families and infants and children need are able to be implemented and sought after much earlier on.
When you talk about the appropriate interventions like what?
Interventions like, as simple as hearing aids, or, their infants are able to be, if they decide to be cochlear implanted, they can do that as early as, 6 months to a year old. And so that will help them with, learning to hear and the ability to speak. Hearing is an auditory skill, and again, depending on vision loss, a student may need, by the time they get to school age, they may need some adaptive technology for school. They may need to have their print enlarged for textbooks, or they may need to make sure that they sit closer to the blackboard. When I was younger, I was told that I had my head in the clouds and that I was a daydreamer in class. And what we didn't know was that I actually probably didn't hear or see as well as the other students. But because we didn't know that, I think I was typecasted as a cheerleader, which I never was, by the way. and I think I tried to overcompensate for that later in life. So it just really does give you a lot of information. For me, I personally, yes, I use cochlear implants and they're very helpful. But I also, as I mentioned, without my cochlear implants, I'm completely deaf, and I learned sign language and later tactile sign language, which is this beautifully intimate and intricate language of the deaf-blind. And using sign language for me has so greatly improved and enhanced my life. And it's a personal decision, but there are many, many, many people who have Usher syndrome, who type one, who were never, never had assistive listening devices, whether it were hearing aids or cochlear implants. And so they are only signers. They do not hear at all or benefit from the use of hearing aids, and they have vision loss. So they really are going completely deaf and blind.
How much of an adjustment was it for you with the cochlear implants?
Oh, man. So cochlear implants, I should mention that I was an ideal candidate for a cochlear implant, meaning that, as you hear, I don't have impaired speech, and I am incredibly fortunate for that, for mm-hmm. my hearing loss to have been later in my life, meaning that, so my biggest dip in hearing loss was at the age of about 19, and as I mentioned, I'm 39 now, when that happened, I experienced what most people or many people with hearing loss experience, and that is tinnitus, which is the ringing of the ears or head noise. And it can be incredibly distracting and almost it can make you feel like you're losing your mind initially because it's as though you're hearing sounds that don't exist and a ringing that is so loud. And you can't do anything to get rid of it because it's in your head. It's your brain's way of trying to overcompensate or compensate for the hearing that it's lost. But so having said that, getting cochlear implanted for me was the best thing I could have done to restore hearing because I knew what hearing sounded like. It's digital. So your brain takes time to adjust and there's a relearning process and that relearning process is laborious. You need people to read to you. You need to constantly be listening, to identify what things sound like, the sound of a car honking, the sound of a door opening, the sound of water running, the difference between hearing the words say, day, way, may, k. You know, those are all you have to hear and relearn the new consonants or the consonants at the beginning of each of those words so that you can discriminate language as well.
Rebecca, we're going to take a pause in our discussion with you and with Dr. Lobby. Come back, talk more with you as we continue on our program. And Liguori's Talking Up, Talking Sports follows our 7 o'clock update on The Fan. It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We have a good time in our discussion talking about this topic of Usher syndrome with our guests, Rebecca Alexander, and also joining us, Dr. Daniel Lobby. And they've shared an awful lot of information with us thus far in our discussion. You know, talking about Usher syndrome, though, and this kind of goes back to something that was stated in the very first segment of this discussion, and that is the psychological side of this. And I guess I'm asking a psychotherapist about the psychological side of it, Rebecca. How do you explain when people ask you what it's like to deal with that?
Well, you know, I think it's difficult for any of us to try to explain to others what our experience of living and life is like, whatever our challenges might be. You know, one of the things that Dr. Labby and I, you know, obviously and we will talk a little bit more about the type of the work that we do and how it's really helped enhance the vision that I still have. But one of the things that we've both sort of always seen eye to eye on, no pun intended or pun intended, but is that, you know, people often focus, whether you're visually impaired or hearing impaired or whatever your circumstances are, or often whether, you know, through our own sort of self-criticism or in the world that we live in with all of the media and social media, we're constantly told that we're not, you know, pretty enough, we're not smart enough, we're not strong enough, we're not rich enough, we're not whatever it is, instead of being reminded of all the things that we are and all the things that we have. And, you know, all of us have different abilities. And none of us are perfect. Nobody is perfect. And so being aware of what your strengths are and what you can do is what really leads to a sense of fulfillment, as opposed to constantly focusing on the things that you can't do or being reminded of the things that you are not. And so I really try to employ that in my life. I certainly know that that's, you know, how Dr. Labby, you know, preaches sort of or practices with his patients. And so to others, I do say to them that when you're going through Usher syndrome and when you're experiencing the loss, just like anything else, you do have to allow yourself to, unfortunately, there's a catchphrase, but it's very important. And that is you have to feel it to heal it. You really have to allow yourself to experience the emotions that come with it so that you can move forward and continue to live your life in a way so that you're not being held back by fear or depression or anxiety. And you also have to be able to talk about it. And that's part of why I wanted to be on the show this morning.
Mm. You know, the natural thought for a lot of people is going to be, though, well, the days where so many people will think of the concept of why me coming to fore. And I guess being able to deal with that, to feel your emotions, and also because it sounds like what you're saying is you also have to put things in perspective.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny, the whole why me question has never, it's never crossed my mind. And I don't know if, you know, my grandmother, who is about, she's actually 100 years old, 100 and a half years old.
Good for her.
She and a monster Cubs fan. I actually threw out the first pitch at Wrigley in June, and she made it from California to Chicago to be there for it. But anyway, she, you know, when I was growing up, she always, you know, said to me that nobody promised me a rose garden. I think the problem is that everybody, or not everybody, many, many people feel like they were promised a rose garden, is that it is like liberty in the pursuit of happiness. But happiness isn't something that just comes to you. You actually really do have to seek it out. And you have to do that, I think, by recognizing that being alive, being human, does not mean that you are guaranteed, like privilege. It does not mean that you're guaranteed the ability to hear and see. These are gifts. These are things that we have to be aware and grateful of, because they are not certain for everyone. And so the why me, I guess, never occurred to me, because I'm also very aware of the fact that I unfortunately was passed on a very rare recessive gene that manifested itself in me from both of my parents. And that's how this came to be. And if I'm being completely honest, you know, as difficult and challenging as it is to go deaf and blind, and as much as it affects me, and as much as I have to cry and mourn the loss myself, it has provided the most incredible sense of meaning and connection and intimacy for me in my life with my friends and family and the world that I never believed or even knew was possible when I was growing up.
Mm. Dr. Labi, is that at all typical of what you hear from patients?
Yeah, you know, and I think it's not just the patients that I care for in my, we'll say, medical practice as opposed to my sports vision practice. Mm-hmm. I hear it from both sides. You know, I had someone in a couple weeks ago who we were talking. He's a high school baseball player and wants to play baseball, hopefully get drafted. And we're talking about what happens if he doesn't get drafted, or if he gets drafted and doesn't go very far. You know, everyone has challenges. You know, I wanted to play baseball when I was a kid, and I played Little League, and I was good for about a year and a half until people grew and threw faster and I couldn't hit anymore. And if I wanted to be involved with sports, I had to find a different path to be involved. And fortunately, I found a path through medicine that's led me to a 25, 30-year career working with professional athletes. So I don't get to play professional sports, but I at least get to be involved in helping those athletes perform. And that's the same thing with people in the medical practices. How can we leverage what we can do to be successful and to make ourselves happy, as opposed to thinking about what we can't do? Like, I couldn't play baseball in Little League or in high school. And I think that's really the key, is to have that perspective. And if you have that perspective, people connect with that. And when you're trying to help them get better and be happier or perform better with their vision, they're going to be more likely to buy in and do the things that you suggest, like the eye exercises that we do with Rebecca, to try to maximize their ability and achieve what they want.
Where do those types of activities take you and take Rebecca in terms of things? And she alluded to this a couple of minutes ago, the kind of things that you've done to try to enhance the vision that she has.
So I'll give you the technical side of it, and then I think it's very helpful for Rebecca to give her personal side of how that helped her.
Mm-hmm.
What vision is much more than just being able to see clearly, you know, a letter on a street. For vision to be useful, you have to be able to see that, but then you have to be able to use that vision to create a motor movement, really, to get around, to pick up something, to move, to make a decision, to do something. And so what we did was work in specific areas that were challenging for Rebecca, and that was the area of hand-eye coordination, to have her marry what she sees with a decision to act and then an actual motor action, a motor movement of the hands or the feet to achieve an action. And in when the vision isn't that sharp or it's not that wide a field, sometimes that can be somewhat hesitant. And by increasing the fluidity, if you will, of that movement, of that vision to motor action pathway, we can have a, make a difference. The other thing we wanted to work on was the idea of visual concentration or multiple target tracking. And we have a system that we can evaluate and test and train that allows somebody to concentrate on what they see and also to track multiple targets. You can imagine walking around the city. There's multiple targets everywhere you turn, cars, pedestrians, garbage cans, things on the street. You have to be able to track and pay attention to all those targets simultaneously. And that system is able to evaluate and train that. Those are the two areas that we mainly worked with Rebecca on.
And what has this meant for you, Rebecca?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I'm actually very competitive, not necessarily with other people, but with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, having that sort of athlete mentality, I love challenging myself. I love finding out what I'm capable of. I love seeing how, you know, practice and hard work sort of pays off. And so it's a lot of fun. I mean, I think I don't know if everybody with vision loss or, you know, fully sighted people who do the work with Dr. Labby would feel this way, but I really enjoy it. We basically use the same, technology and the tools that he uses with professional athletes. I just use it on a much smaller sort of scale in terms of a much smaller field with what I have. But being able to, you know, sort of identify a target and immediately, as he was talking about the hand-eye coordination, immediately be able to sort of respond to it and see my response time improve. Many people in New York City and the surrounding areas have either been, you know, hit by a car, not because they don't see well, because there's just so much commotion and so much action and so much to be aware of. And I've been hit by, I can't even tell you, probably over four or five, cabs in my time living in New York City, which is about 16 years. And so doing the work with him is, for me, it's been not only fun because I get to challenge myself and really find out what I'm capable of, but it feels very empowering. It feels like I'm not just sort of sitting around and allowing this to happen. I'm really taking charge and making the most of what I have.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking also about what very often people will say is almost overstimulation visually in an area like New York, because it's just there's so much going on. And I guess, is it kind of a balancing act, you know, when you're dealing with Usher syndrome too?
Yeah, I mean, I think for everybody, it's overstimulation with both hearing and vision. And, you know, the first thing I do when I come home from work or the end of the day is I take my cochlear implants off. And it is like, you know, as much as people can't imagine what it's like to lose your hearing, for me, it's also been like my own sense. It's like my religion, my own sense of solace, my peace at the end of the day. But with vision, you know, you're constantly having to overcompensate when you don't have full vision by, you know, scanning constantly. And you will see people with vision loss, oftentimes their eyes are darting because their eyes are trying to get as much information as they can with the limited vision that they have. So, and it is very difficult to navigate New York City. I think for a lot of people, that's why, you know, people don't start using their cane when they need it until oftentimes anywhere between about 5 to 15 years after they really should be using it. And that's another thing that I sort of want to help sort of spread awareness about. And that is that, like, use a cane not only to help you, particularly in New York City, to navigate, but also to sort of, you know, alert others that they need to get out of your way.
Hmm. Interesting discussion that we are having with Rebecca and Dr. Labby. And one of the thoughts that I've been having throughout this discussion is in talking about Usher syndrome. What is it that folks who are listening to our discussion today, what do you want them to take away from this chat?
I'll let Dr. Labby answer that first.
Well, I think that the most important point that I would make is make sure you have regular eye care. Usher syndrome is something that you know, when you're 80 years old, you're going to know you had Usher syndrome or not. It manifests long before that. But even when you're younger, if you're 50, if you're 40, if you're 30, regular health care, eye care is really the key to maximizing the abilities you have and protecting and preserving your health into the future. And I think far too many people don't pay attention to routine eye care. They're on their warranty still, and they feel like they see well. They don't have to go to the eye doctor. And I think they could miss a lot of things, like Rebecca has mentioned, the implants, the cane, if they need that, getting it in time, the diagnosis soon enough to either maximize ability or the ability to avoid further loss. All can be done if you have regular eye care and, in the broader sense, health care. So that's kind of the bottom line. And I think there's many other pieces beyond that that are critical as well.
Rebecca?
Yeah. You know, first and foremost, I really want people to know that they're not alone in what they deal with and what they live with on a daily basis, whether it's Usher syndrome or, again, any type of debilitating condition. It could be mental, physical, emotional. And so part of that is being able to, you know, get the word out that we are all living with something. And as far as Usher syndrome goes, I really do want people to live their lives with fulfillment and to know that there is no shame in this. I think that there really has been a lot that has happened in terms of the progression of the way we view people with disabilities. And I'm here to sort of show people that disabilities does not mean that your life is now going to be relegated to, to not being able to find meaning and fulfillment, that you can live just as strong and fulfilling of a life as anybody else. I'm really, really looking forward to the game on Tuesday. We're going to have a great crowd there from the Usher community, and also a public service announcement, and even the ability to text and donate to help raise funds for research to find treatment for the vision loss.
Very interesting discussion. Hopefully folks listening to us this morning learned some things as well. I know I did. Rebecca Alley.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just for
Find
you.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.